This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Police in Washington, D.C. arrest a man who allegedly threatened to blow up former President Barack Obama's home. CBS's Jeff Pegues reports the suspect was also wanted for the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol.
Law enforcement officials tell CBS News that 37-year-old Taylor Taranto was spotted in former President Obama's Washington neighborhood this afternoon. When police approached, he ran toward Mr. Obama's home before being arrested with multiple weapons and explosive materials. Officials were concerned because Taranto had been live streaming threats in recent days that have since been deleted.
The Supreme Court strikes down affirmative action in college admissions. It stemmed from cases involving Harvard and the University of North Carolina. More from CBS's Major Garrett.
This sweeping and historic ruling effectively ends affirmative action in college admissions, reversing decades of precedent that less conservative court majorities had protected in giving colleges and universities some latitude to consider race as one factor as they sought to build more diverse student bodies.
Another decision from the nation's high court today solidified protections for workers who ask for religious accommodations. Postal worker Gerald Groff, a Christian, didn't want to work on Sundays. He says of the ruling,
"We did win. I'm over the moon. I'm very, very excited for this moment."
A record wildfire season in Canada leads to poor air quality in dozens of U.S. states. The latest from CBS's Scott McFarlane.
Washington, D.C. today had some of the most polluted air in the world. D.C. and Maryland urged face coverings and for seniors to minimize their time outside.
For those who live in the Midwest, Mid, and Deep South, the heat and humidity won't let up. Those working outside, like utility company employees, are being warned to go easy and take a lot of breaks. Richard Moore is with Entergy Mississippi.
So every morning we have a safety briefing, and we try to inform crews to really take breaks to try to mitigate heat exhaustion.
Rapper Travis Scott will not face criminal charges as a result of the crowd surge that killed 10 and injured hundreds at the 2021 AstroWorld Festival in Houston. Reporter Chris Fox.
A Houston grand jury declined to indict the local rap star. Travis Scott's attorney called the decision a great relief, adding that Scott never encouraged people to do anything that resulted in other people being hurt. Mohit Balani attended the concert with his cousin Barty Shahani, who was killed. Balani blames concert organizer Live Nation for negligence.
I think the word that should be used is atrocity. This was 100% avoidable. This was an act of pure brutality.
Scott and Live Nation have faced over 100 civil lawsuits. Chris Fox for CBS News, Austin.
This is CBS News.
Find great hires fast with Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring solution makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
News is brought to you by Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a statewide team of personal injury lawyers getting you the justice you deserve. Call 855-954-1186 for a free consultation.
Here's what you need to know in western Wisconsin. Good afternoon, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Drought continues to expand in the state, now affecting over 81% of Wisconsin. That includes all of western Wisconsin, especially in the lower Wisconsin River Valley, where the area of severe drought has doubled in just 1 week. Forecasters say some relief may be on the way. Wisconsin's expected to have above normal precipitation over the next 6 to 10 days. A teenager is charged in the death of a child in La Crosse County earlier this month. A 16-year-old boy with initials KR is facing a first-degree intentional homicide charge after he told investigators he hit his niece, which caused her death on June 14th. By statute, the teenager is being charged as an adult, but the case could still move to juvenile court. He is being held at the La Crosse County Jail on a $250,000 cash bond. And a western Wisconsin city's growth means more wells. The city of Altoona is adding 2 new wells to bring its total to 9. Each well will cost about $1 million. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
When it comes to achieving successful jury verdicts and settlements, one law firm stands out above the rest. Gingras Thompson & Wachs, a $6.2 million settlement for a woman permanently paralyzed as a result of medical malpractice. $4.9 million to members of a family injured due to the negligence of a truck driver and his employer. Call Gingras Thompson & Wachs today. 855-954-1186.
All in to win. Gingras Thompson & Wachs.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
We're here!
Whoa! That was fast!
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. This is 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
Website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So just when you thought Moore versus whatever was gone, because of the gerrymandering case, and good on the Supreme Court on this one, they got this right. Yeah, you know what? Blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while. But there's another Moore case coming up. This one, you know, I think just as bad. It seems, what is it with Moore? They want more. But there's a case evidently that has been filed, Moore versus the U.S., that could have major implications, brought by the folks at the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the Baker Hostetler on behalf of Kathleen and Charles Moore. They're a married couple who they don't want to pay taxes. They think more for them. And here to share some thoughts on what this Competitive Enterprise lawsuit could bring us and what it could mean for taxpayers, what it could mean for the coffers, and what it could mean for the very wealthy. I've asked our good friend Morris Pearl to come talk with us. Morris is the chair of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org, the website. Morris, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick. Great to be in your show.
So there's this lawsuit. I'm sure you've seen this. So as a rich guy, you gotta be okay with this. This is more for you, man.
It could be. One of the basic ideas of our tax code is when you make money, you pay a percentage of that in taxes. And most of your listeners understand that. They see on every pay stub a deduction for taxes. But somebody like me, I make investment income, or say somebody's like a partner in a law firm and their law firm makes money and stuff like that. There's lots of ways to make money without actually getting a paycheck that has a deduction for taxes. And the law used to be that if you had an investment in a foreign country, like say you were a partner in a partnership in Canada or something, or some other country, then you only pay taxes when you actually receive the money. And they changed that in 2017 with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in order to offset lower taxes. They said, if you're making profits from a business, even if it's not in this country, you have to pay taxes on that too. However, these guys didn't like that. And they especially didn't like having to pay tax on their accumulated profits in previous years that they thought would be deferred forever, according to them. And they're suing. They only paid the government $14,000 back in 2018, and then they sued to get it back, saying this is unconstitutional.
So $14,000, they're going to pay all the legal fees and all of the tens of thousands of dollars that have to come in legal fees to get $14,000 back. I don't see the return on investment.
I think the American Enterprise Institute is getting a return on their investment.
Oh, the conservative think tank.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they have some donors who are planning to save millions or billions if the Supreme Court decides in favor of the Moores on this one.
Oh, okay. So they're taking a sympathetic couple. They're going to put them out as the showpiece, but really behind the scenes, this is big money.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. And don't get me wrong. I mean, liberals do that too.
Sure.
Sometimes you get rich donors backing lawsuits. You know, there's a lawsuit against the case Trump lost. They just paid $5 million to Gene Carroll. There were rich donors backing that one too. Not Gene Carroll, who's not paying those legal fees,
right.
I assure you. So that in itself is okay. And yeah, it's a test case. And yeah, maybe they're a sympathetic couple from the state of Washington, whatever. But the basic principle is they don't want to pay any taxes. You know, currently, if you own a business, it might be a corporation, and then the corporation pays taxes every single year. Or it could be a partnership or a few other things, what they call a pass-through entity, like typically lawyers would form a partnership. And then they would divide up the profits and tell each member of the partnership, you have to pay taxes on your share of the profits, irregardless of whether you got in cash or not. You know, the partnership might have used all of its profits to redecorate the office or something, but still the partners had to pay tax on those profits. I mean, these guys say that isn't fair. That isn't income. We never got it in cash. It's just still in our business. That's in a business bank account, not our personal bank account. And so they're arguing that it's not income. They're also arguing it's unfair that it's retroactive since they already made the money before the law was changed. And both of those things are ridiculous arguments. The Supreme Court has ruled time and time again that you can be charged taxes on profits your business makes, even if that money stays in the business. That's come up in lots of different contexts, not just lawyers' partnerships,
right,
but lots of different businesses that we call pass-through entities.
Right. But Morris, we've got a new Supreme Court. we've got a Supreme Court that sides on the side of corporations overwhelmingly. We've got a Supreme Court that should, you know, wear NASCAR robes.
That is sadly true. That is sadly true. And I don't know how they're going to decide. They might very well overrule all kinds of precedents going back almost 100 years and rule that lots of taxes we now charge are unconstitutional. They might rule the same as the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled, that yes, this is long decided that this is the way taxes work, and sorry, Moores, but you have to pay your fair share. I mean, they might come up with some other in-between kind of a thing too, I suppose.
Yeah, but here's the thing. If they took the case, if the lower court, you know, has this ruling that, hey, tough luck, this is how it's always been, this is how it's going to be, if that's the case, and they're taking this, it seems to me that there's, and I know you only need four justices to take a case, but it seems to me there's interest on, you know, with our nine little robed dictators.
Well, there's certainly interest. There's certainly a group of justices who basically don't think we should do stuff collectively. They're against collective labor agreements. They're against collective everything. And they're certainly against government. So they want to read the rules very narrowly of what the government is allowed to do. And, you know, then the income, the 19th Amendment about income taxes, well, income from any source derived is what it says. So hopefully that includes money made in a corporation you own that's in a foreign country. But yeah, I don't know what the Supreme Court's going to do.
I'm hoping
they don't, you know, just decide that investors don't have to pay taxes, but they might.
I bring this up because, you know, recently, I'm sure you've seen, as everyone else has, you know, Clarence Thomas has got some interesting problems. You had, you know, Justice Alito, who came out with his prebuttal about, you know, yeah, I took the Alaska trip. That was $1,000 a day and a $100,000 flight. But hey, the seat was going to be empty anyway. So I was doing them a favor by going. There seems to be some very cozy relationships with some very wealthy people. It seems like, and I'm not saying there's a quid pro quo here. I'm not saying that they're going to do this because, you know, they got these trips, but they're primed. I mean, they're in that world. It just seems to me, seems this is where we're going to go.
Yeah. I mean, the same way that you kind of know what it's like to be a truck driver. And if something about truck driving comes up, you understand, you know, the challenges of being a long haul driver and can kind of sympathize with them. Well, these guys know what it's like to be a rich investor who doesn't like to pay taxes and sympathize with them.
Right.
And that's sad. It really is.
So for folks out there who are going like, you know, I hate paying taxes. And look, you know, most of my buddies hate paying taxes. Most people I know hate paying taxes. What does this country look like without a tax base?
Well, let me tell you a secret. I don't like paying taxes either. I don't like to pay taxes. I'm not sure about my wife. She's just an accountant, so maybe she does. But the same way, I also don't like to pay the, you know, the common charges to my apartment. I don't like to pay the annual dues for the club that I'm in. But I want to have a nice club where I can meet with people and have a fancy lunch once in a while. And I want to live in this fancy apartment on Park Avenue. And I want to have a country where I can, you know, invest money and create businesses, and my children and granddaughter can grow up and have the opportunities that I had. And so I pay for all those things. You know, I pay the common charges in the apartment, I pay the club dues, and I pay my taxes. And that's how it works. There's a price for society. That's what Oliver Wendell Holmes said. So I don't like to pay taxes. I don't want to pay taxes, but I pay them because I want to be in a system where everyone pays some taxes and we have enough money in the Commonwealth to pay for stuff.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Morris Pearl. Morris is the chairman of the Patriotic Millionaires, patrioticmillionaires.org, their website, if you want to take a look at the incredible work that they do. Now, you are out there on the ground. Taxes seems to be your thing. You're out on the ground in North Carolina and Wisconsin, coming to Pennsylvania, and doing an online program to educate people about taxes. Because look, you know, as you said, nobody likes to pay them, but understanding what they're good for, understanding, you know, the things that we need, roads, bridges, a military, you know, a safety net to ensure that we don't have abject poverty and people dying on the streets. There are things that we want and need as a society, and this is how it's paid for. So I think having the education and having the kind of program that you guys are doing with the Great Economy Project is incredibly important.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. You know, we're hoping it works. We're hoping these guys learn that they're paying taxes, they're deducting from their paychecks every single week, and other people are investors, and they just are not. And it's not fair. So they may, you know, may or may not vote for one party or the other, but I think they're going to call their representatives and tell them they want a more fair tax system. Or they might have different representatives, who knows? But that's what we're getting at, is just educating people about how the system works and how it's a lot more fair for some people than other people. And it could be improved. And we need legislators in Washington and your state capital, all of the state capitals, who want to make some improvements and make it more fair for everyone. And I'm working on it.
No, you guys are doing a great work. And because I think it's important to kind of paint a picture of, you know, without a tax base, without the investments that are happening, and I think the Biden administration is doing a great job of investing in the things that we need, the infrastructure we need, reshoring manufacturing, doing the stuff that needs to get done. But in the absence of that, we become a crumbling society of chaos. And I think once you get to that bottom line, I think people then turn around and go, maybe we don't want that for the future.
Well, they tried that in South Africa when I was a teenager. It did not end well for the rich people or the poor people either, for that matter. We don't want America to end up that way. And I'm trying to do something about it. and we're trying to make it more fair now so we don't have the whole thing blow up with, I don't know, anarchy sometime in the future.
I got an email from Brad. Brad asks, what was it like before the Trump tax code changes? How was this money taxed in the past? Is this something new that Trump brought on? I'm curious, you know, can you talk to that a little bit? What was it like before the 2017 law?
This particular thing is different. If you own a substantial part, meaning more than 10% of a company in a foreign country, under the old law, you only pay taxes if you receive the money in cash. They sent you a check, like a dividend or something, or you sold it. Under the new law, you have to pay taxes on your share of the profits, your percentage of the profits every single year. And in 2018, you had to pay taxes on the accumulated money from previous years that you never paid tax on before. And you have like a 30-year time period in which to do that. So they're not trying to stick you all at once in 1 year. That's what they're objecting to, is the fact that in 2018, they had to pay taxes on money that had been profits in their company in years earlier. And they thought they could have it deferred forever as long as they never brought the money into the United States. And they relied upon that, they say. I mean, they do. And the new law is that in 2018, they had to pay taxes on all the profits that their company made, their share of all the profits their company made up to 2017. And then going forward, every year they have to pay taxes on the money they earned that year. And they have a long time to do the catch up for that 1 year. So that's what they were objecting to, was A, having to pay tax on money that was never brought into the United States, that was still in their company bank accounts in a foreign country, and two, that it was retroactive. And both of those things are long settled laws.
Yeah.
That, I mean, there's lots of taxes. Lots of times they change the rules, and lots of times where you're charged money on profits you make, even though the money is still in a company checking account or something, not your own personal checking account.
Yeah, the fact that you said it was decided law makes me go, uh-oh, here we go again, turning decided law stare decisis on its head. But this gives us something to look forward to, I guess, next year, right? This session's over. We'll have next summer to look forward how this is going to play out.
Yeah, it'll be it'll be in the late fall or winter next year when they'll argue the case, and then a year from now we'll find out.
Morris, as always, I appreciate the time and the insight. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you, Rick. Great to talk to you. Yep. Bye-bye.
Our good friend Morris Pearl. Make sure you check out their website, patrioticmillionaires.org. Gonna take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Have the talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I know taxes are sexy, aren't they? There's nothing gets you excited like a good tax talk. But the reality is that this is how we fund the things that we need. This is how we're going to move forward in this country and leave something for our children and our grandchildren. And ensuring another way for rich people to evade taxes is one of those things that makes me kind of angry. Especially when you have these big money groups who are spending huge amounts of cash to get 14 grand for this couple. And understand, that's the little tip of the iceberg. It makes you go, oh, it's only 14 grand. What's the big deal? No. The reason the Competitive Enterprise Institute is behind it, the reason one of these fancy law firms is behind it and throwing huge amounts of lawyerly money away, they know that the pot of gold is at the end of that rainbow. They know what this means for the people who are actually investing in this. And we don't get to know who they are. And that's part of my problem with how our legal system works. And I know Moore said, you know, it's on the both sides. Yeah, it is. And I don't think it's right. But again, it comes back to this moment where as working people, you and me, every paycheck we get, it's right there on the line. They take it out. And, you know, everyone, every week, I hear my buddies every week, you know, complaining, look at this, look at what they took out of here. And when you work overtime, it's even more. They make sure that they keep pushing it into working people. And how many tax breaks did working people get under the Trump's tax code? Oh, yeah, almost nothing. And they expire. Did you know that? What crumbs that Trump threw to the working class expires? But those corporate tax cuts, oh boy, those are forever. Them's permanent. Because, well, smart people know what to do with the money, I guess. That's the argument, isn't it? They're the smart people. They know what to do with it. And look, as I've said a million times, our system is set up and operates exactly as it's supposed to. It is working perfectly for the people who control the massive amounts of wealth. And you know, as Morris points out, look, we don't want to live in a country where we're not investing in the future of our nation. We don't want to live in a country where the roads are worse than they are now, where infrastructure is crumbling worse than it is now, where we have chaos in the streets. And this is why, as I've been saying, I think Biden is doing some really smart stuff. Bringing jobs back, giving people hope and opportunity. That's how you move this country in a positive direction. I know everyone's thought, I get hit every day. You know, there's the crime-riddled cities. Yeah, there's some crime problems. There are, because there's desperation out there. How do we address that? Austerity, not the answer. Investment in the future technologies, investment in our infrastructure, that's a way to go forward. So I look at this moment, and I look at the work that Morris and his group are doing. Taking off the red hat and the blue hat and talking about the green. You know, I still love Rupert Murdoch. You know, Rupert was right. It's not about red or blue. It's about green. It's always about money. It's always about the war between capital and labor. That's always been what it is. Take whatever issue it is. And instead of focusing on right, left, or Democrat, Republican, give it a turn. It's up, down. That's the reality. Always up, down. This affirmative action thing, for me, again, comes back down to the fact that this is going to make it easier for wealthy kids to get into college, into these elite colleges. It's not going to be, you know, there's the meritocracy that we want to believe exists doesn't. I talked to a couple of college professors today who go and do this stuff. The admissions process is really subjective. And if you don't have the kind of affluent background, if you don't have the money to help, you know, fill out the application and write your essays, and you don't have the ability to do all of the extracurriculars because you got to get a part-time job at night to ensure that you can put food on the table. There are barriers there that nobody wants to talk about. Nobody. But they're there. the invisible capital that we all want to ignore. I come back to George W. Bush did not get into the University of Texas, but he got into Yale and Harvard. I know the University of Texas is an esteemed university. It's not on the level of Yale and Harvard. Now here's the thing. If you're in Texas, them's probably fighting words. But for the rest of the nation, it is what it is. And somehow a C student, he got right in. And stayed right in. Why? Because he had the money. The legacy got him in. The cash kept him. Yeah, I want to believe that the content of your character and your ability to succeed should drive us. Absolutely. But there are some who do need a hand. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1917. That was the day that American folklorist Archie Greene was born in Winnipeg, Canada. His father was a Ukrainian refugee who had fought in the 1905 Russian Revolution. As a young boy, his family moved to Los Angeles. There, he enjoyed listening to cowboy songs on the radio. Archie grew up to become a shipwright and a carpenter, but he never forgot those cowboy songs. At the age of 40, he returned to college at the University of Illinois to study labor history. He wanted to learn about the songs and the stories at the heart of the U.S. labor movement. He was interested in what he dubbed labor lore, the folklore of working people. For 7 years, Archie led the effort to get Congress to pass the American Folklife Preservation Act. Finally, in 1976, Congress unanimously supported the act. The act allowed for the founding of the American Folklife Center at the Library of Congress. The center helps to collect the stories of the working class. Archie wrote books and essays about workers, including miners, tinsmiths, millwrights, and the Sailors Union of the Pacific. In 2007, he helped to edit the Big Red Songbook. The book includes the lyrics of nearly 200 labor songs. These songs had been included in various editions of the Little Red Songbooks published by the Industrial Workers of the World between 1909 and 1973. Archie Greene understood that workers' stories deserved to be remembered and told. He spent 5 decades as a scholar and advocate for these stories. His work has helped to preserve the record of working-class life in America for generations to come.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
When you think of Americans whose music has made a lasting difference, you might think of Scott Joplin, Woody Guthrie, Maybelle Carter, Harry Belafonte, or Roger Payne. Who? I came across Payne in a June obituary reporting that he had died at age 88. Yes, I occasionally scan the obits, not out of morbid curiosity, but because these little death notices encompass our people's history, reconnecting us to common lives that had some small or surprisingly large impact. Payne's impact is still reverberating around the globe, even though few know his name. A biologist who studied moths in the 1960s, he chanced upon a technical military recording of undersea sounds that incidentally included a cacophony of baying, shrieking, mooing, squealing, and caterwauling. They were the voices of humpback whales. What others had considered noise blew my mind, said Payne, describing them as a musical chorus of exuberant, uninterrupted rivers of sound. His life's work shifted from moths to whales, then to the interdependence of all species. At the time, whales were treated by industry and governments as dull, lumbering nuisances. But Payne's musical instincts came into play, sensing that the singing of these magnificent mammals might reach the primordial soul of humans. So he collected their rhythmic, haunting melodies into a momentous 1970 recording titled Songs of a Humpback Whale. It became a huge bestseller, altered public perception, and spawned a global Save the Whales campaign, one of the most successful conservation movements ever. This is Jim Hightower saying, so without writing or performing a single musical note, this scientist produced a truly powerful serenade from nature that continues to make a difference. To connect with Roger Payne's musical work and help extend his deep understanding that all of us beings are related, contact oceanalliance@whale.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So you may remember me talking about the Texas Death Star bill. It's the mother of all preemption laws. It says that, you know, basically if you're a city, a town, a borough, a hamlet in Texas, you can do nothing legislatively that the state prevents. You can't raise minimum wage, can't have, you know, better working conditions, you can't have paid sick days, you can't have, you know, breaks during heat. You can't do any of that stuff. Nothing for you. And look, we've seen these preemption laws pop up all over the place. You know, in my state of Pennsylvania, the last time we passed a minimum wage increase, that would have been, what, 2006? 7/15, nothing in between. And they said, sorry, the only way we're gonna pass this is if Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Allentown, you can't raise it above this. This is a state minimum wage. No one can do anything else. And look, to get Republican votes, they had to agree. And what we've had is we've had a stagnant minimum wage ever since. But these preemption laws stop local ability to make your conditions better. Now, remember, our Republican friends love to tell us how much they love local, want to get big government off their backs. But they don't seem to mind using big government to stifle people's ability to make changes. You know, democracy stuff. So this Death Star bill, this preemption bill, we had talked about not too long ago, went into effect, which ended in, I think it was Houston and Austin, the ability of you know, localities to have mandate breaks during certain heat-related times when temperatures rise to a certain degree. You know, mandatory breaks go into effect. Now you go, but Rick, you know, what employer would do that to their workers? What employer would not allow people to have breaks? Trust me, they're out there. And what we saw a postal worker who dropped, you know, doing the job because of the heat. Now we see this story that inmates in Texas prisons are now dying. In fact, they've had at least 9 inmates die. Two men in their 30s have died of heart attacks and other heat-related illnesses. And what they're saying is it's the lack of air conditioning in these prisons. And I know, what do you think, these are country clubs? Yeah, I got to tell you, when you know, temperatures get in the Texas heat, way the heck up there, yeah, if you're going to take control of someone's person, you've got to make sure that they don't die. I think that's the, you know, if we're going to make a bare minimum, not dying, the bare minimum. Not letting people have heat-related illnesses that kill them, kind of a start. Now, the weird thing is evidently it's been 11 years since the last death in the state of Texas that in the prisons that had been heat-related. I don't know. Could this Death Star bill have something to do with it? Or could it just be the reality is our Republican friends are getting much more cruel? And as I say before, the cruelty is always the point. The destroyer party is always about inflicting the most pain and suffering. And what's interesting is, you know, you have the January 6th criminals who have been whining like you. Oh, my gosh. Well, the prisons are bad. You know, the food is bad. We're not respected. Yeah. What's always amazing to me is I guarantee every one of those people who are whining and complaining because they got locked up and have found out, you know, there's that saying, mess around and find out. Well, they found out how bad prison is. They can't go, oh, they're like country clubs with swimming pools and weight rooms, and they get to watch color TV all day. No. Some of these places are really freaking bad.
And now they're finding out. So instead of going, hey, how do we make this better? As most prisoners do, I've got friends who have gone to prison and they come out as you know, hyper-liberal. You know, we need to really do some stuff. Not our MAGA friends. No, no. But what's weird is the Texas State House, according to this report that I was reading, the Texas State House had passed a bill not too long ago that agreed to spend some $545 million over two phases of a four-phase plan to put air conditioning in all of the state prisons by 2031. But the Senate said, like, just like everywhere, the Senate, where, you know, where progress goes to die, no, they trashed that. The final budget, which I guess goes into effect in September, will instead give the Texas Department of Criminal Justice $85 million for what they're calling additional deferred projects. Now, that may be air conditioning. That may just be patching walls. Who knows? But it's not the $545 million that the House had said, hey, we need to take care of these people. And look, we're heading into a moment. I've said before, I'm not a climate scientist. Don't pretend to be. Don't pretend to know all of the answers on the climate issue. But when I hear someone say, look, things are bad, I pay attention, you know, because I respect smart people. I know we're in a moment in this country where, where ignorance is bliss. I know we're in a moment where, you know, we want to mock the intelligence of others. But I'm looking at this meteorologist. This guy, his name's Jeff Berdelli. He is the chief meteorologist and a climate scientist, a climate specialist down in Tampa, Florida. And he says, look, in my 3-decade-long career being a weather forecaster, I have never observed so many of Earth's vital signs blinking red. Meteorologists and climate scientists all around the world are in awe by the simultaneous, literal, off-the-charts records being broken. And he said, look, yes, it's climate change. Steady rise in temperatures over the last couple of decades has you know, placed the baseline climate so high that achieving these extremes, which used to be rare, are now expected because conditions are ripe. We're living the worst case scenarios that the smart people have been warning us about for years. And this is where I come back to this idea of, look, I don't know the answers to all of this, but there's some common sense stuff we should be maybe thinking about. Solar panels to me seem to make sense. And I know there's some sourcing problems. There's some stuff that go along with that. And I get that. How we fix that, how we mitigate that, that's a matter of policy. But when Elon Musk, whom I'm not a fan of, says, look, we have the ability to be energy independent. And he said, look, it's just a small part of a couple of, you know, southwestern states, small areas. They could do it. You just have to have the want and the will. And this is where I keep coming back to this idea that as a country, we used to be part of our pride and part of our identity. Now look, you know, I saw this poll just a little bit ago that said that, you know, the fewest number of people in American history are very proud to be American. And I'm going, you know, if you go back and you think about those hyper-patriotic days, there were things for people to get behind. The moon landing, big thing. Manhattan Project, Marshall Plan. You know, we did big things. We accomplished incredible things. We pulled together to do great things. We can, again, you want people to be extremely proud, very proud to be an American. Because this was are you very proud, proud, somewhat proud? And, you know, the lowest number of people threw in the very. You want people to be very proud of this country? Do some big stuff. Give us a reason to stop hating each other. Give us a reason to come together with a common goal, common purpose. the climate seems to be one of those places. Now, understand, the moneyed interests don't want this. The big oil companies certainly don't want it. The gas industry, not at all. I'm pitched daily by people on both sides of the political aisle going after EVs and going after the future changes to our grid. Because the money is being flowing. But we could be energy independent. You know, I go back to when we put solar panels on our house. I think it was 2011 or 12. And, you know, my kids, who were very small at the time, were like, you know, how come every house doesn't have solar panels? How come the school doesn't have it? And then their school district put in a massive array. And there was a sense of pride. Look at how incredible this is. And, you know, done with IBEW labor, done with union labor, you know, done on a project labor agreement, all of that stuff. But there was a sense of pride there. We can expand this. It just comes down to the political will. It comes down to the want. And the question is when will we want? When it's too late? I mean, the fact that we're still relying on you know, places like Saudi Arabia and Russia and anyone is just beyond me. And I know, Rick, we need to drill, baby, drill more. Again, you know, and I know my left friends don't like to hear this, but Biden has given out enormous amounts of leases. The industry doesn't want it. They've got more leases than they know what to do with. They've just chosen not to. So the question then becomes, what does it take for us to wake up to this? Is it going to be more wildfires? I don't know where you live, but the reality is, you know, Canada is still burning. And our air quality here in the Susquehanna Valley in Pennsylvania, not good. I was talking to somebody in D.C. today. Air quality, not good. Why? Canada. Blame Canada. But more importantly, blame climate change. We now have fire seasons in Canada that affect us. The question is when do we come around to the reality? And I know I've had people tell me, oh, it's, you know, it's all overblown. You know, the planets, you know, earthquakes, you know, volcanoes. Yeah, all that stuff. You're right. But I can't imagine that pulling all the oil out of the ground. And we've seen just a story the other day of how much water we're pulling out of the ground has actually helped somehow tilt the planet a little bit. You know, there's all of this stuff that, you know, because we're depleting natural resources, that we're causing real damage. And as I've said, look, I'm not the expert on this, but I listen to experts and I listen to people who are going, look, it's code red. The lights are blinking, man. When are you going to do something? And yet we've still got a Republican Party with their head in the sand. Or head in the oil company's profits. Because we're still giving them tax subsidies, which is mind-blowing to me. I guess I shouldn't be surprised. It's still, you know, I come back to the main point. It's about the green. It's about the money. It's about the power that the money gives you. And I used to believe that you know, while the wealthy had all the money, we out-procreated them. They're more of us. And if we could come together and if we could come around to a common idea that, you know, maybe we don't want to die of heat exposure. Maybe we can pass laws that are going to help workers make it through the hot summer. Maybe we're going to be able to, you know, pass laws to do some things to help prisoners. Maybe we could do those things. We're not. So the hope is we get on the same page. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break, right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1936. Jesus Polares, a Chicano miner and union organizer, was deported from the United States. He was charged with having communist sympathies and declared an undesirable alien. At the time he was deported, Polares had been in the United States for more than 20 years. He found work in New Mexico as a coal miner. He first stood up to the mine bosses in Gallup, New Mexico. When he dared to speak out against the company, he was fired. He then went to Madrid, New Mexico, where he became involved in union organizing. There again, he was fired for speaking out, evicted from his company home, and blacklisted. Polares recognized that Chicano mine workers needed to stand strong. He helped to found the Liga Obrera de Habla Española, or the League of Spanish-Speaking Workers. The organization quickly gathered members around northern New Mexico and southern Colorado. It grew from a few hundred miners to more than 8,000 strong. Then in 1935, the miners went on strike in Gallup. Martial law was declared. 300 miners and their families were evicted from their homes. When a warrant was served on one miner to throw them out of their homes, others blocked the doors in an effort to stop the eviction. They were arrested for breaking and entering. Protesters converged on the jail and were met with tear gas. The sheriff and his deputies opened fire on the protesters. The fight left one sheriff and two miners dead. In the aftermath, Polares was jailed for his role as a labor leader. He was deported, along with more than 100 other Chicano miners. Deportation was a tool used to stifle organizing amongst Latino workers. Liga Obrera never recovered from the loss of its leaders. The organization lost strength and momentum. But Liga Obrera is proof that workers can organize and fight for a better tomorrow.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
So Jane in Santa Fe sent me an email during the break, pointing out the fact that, and I talked about this at the beginning, with the Supreme Court overturning affirmative action. You knew this was going to come. She says that Democrats are now calling on Attorney General Merrick Garland to file charges against any college or university that engages in discrimination, i.e. legacy admissions. And, you know, this is got to be, this is the next thing. This is where this goes. Now look, I'll tell you, they got to go. I mean, it was always curious to me that how many people, you ever see the movie Animal House? I love Animal House, one of my favorite movies ever. But Flounder was a legacy. He got into the fraternity because his brother was there. His brother Fred was a frat boy. So Flounder gets in. Didn't have to do anything. He was in. And I remember thinking even back then that screwed up. I know we want to make sure that we keep the line pure. And it's interesting that there are people who will say affirmative action is bad, but legacy not so much. Curious to me. Also, I want to get some thoughts on, I guess we're going to start sending powdery substances again in the mail. According to the FBI, they're trying to determine where more than 100 letters containing white powder came from. I guess we're going to start this stupidity again. You know, can't you come up with something better? Oh, we're going to send you fake ricin. Until some idiot actually does it. Also, someone with explosives and an active January 6th warrant evidently was found near Barack Obama's house. We're going to do this? You know, every time I hear Trump, you know, say, well, you know, people need to educate Jack Smith, his family and his friends. These are the people that he's talking to. The people who are going to send who knows what in the mail. The people who are going to go to somebody's home with explosive devices. Now, on the Trump front, because I haven't really talked about Trump today. On the Trump front, it looks like there could be more charges against him. This would be interesting. They're evidently this thing called superseding indictments, which would add a second set of charges onto what already is there. They're looking at more of this because evidently Rudy went and Rudy bared his soul. Rudy was a songbird. Rudy narked everybody out. Rudy covering his own behind. And it's been reported that he went and had this interview and as a proffer interview, which basically is he sold his soul to keep his behind out of jail. I don't think he should. I think all of that whole display at the Four Seasons landscaping and other places where he was single-handedly selling the steel. He was single-handedly selling a conspiracy theory he knew wasn't true. And you go, well, how do you know he knows? Because he never stood in front of a judge and said it. He'd go out to the Four Seasons parking lot. He'd go on a kangaroo court in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and go on. He'd go all over the place, spew on every TV, radio, everywhere. Conspiracy after conspiracy, allegation after allegation. But when he stepped into that room, the lawyer in him said, no, probably shouldn't do this. This could get me into real trouble. The dupes and the idiots who want to hear the conspiracy, yeah, we'll feed the outrage, but not going to take the chance of putting my hand on that book and swearing to tell the whole truth and then not and being held accountable for. So I'm interested to see what comes out of that. Because I'll tell you, I think Trump's in real trouble. Now, will it matter to the base? No, not even a little bit. In fact, it'll make him more loved, which again is weird because the guy lies so well. I mean, to be honest, he lies so proficiently. For instance, you may remember one of the defenses that he had the classified documents is he declassified everything. There's a standing order. There's nothing classified anymore. He has the ability to have it all. It's, you know, maybe it was left in a drawer somewhere, maybe in the vanity in the bathroom, in the guest bathroom, maybe the Lincoln bedroom. Maybe it's in the chamber pot in the Lincoln bedroom. That's where it's at. But nobody can find it. The Justice Department can't find it. And the Office of the Director of National Intelligence can't find it. Nobody can find it. No one can find this mystery standing order that Trump has sworn is there. He did it. Which, again, means that the stuff is classified. And I don't even know that you can have a standing declassified order that says waving a magic wand and go, everything's declassified. We're opening everything. There's nothing that's classified. Nothing's secret. We're going to give our enemies and our friends and everybody who likes us or don't, we're just going to give it away. You know, it's one of those things where you buy that. I got bridges for sale. Quite remarkable. And finally, Ohio is, you know, Pennsylvania is grateful for Ohio because our political system isn't quite as corrupt. We haven't had much scandal lately, but Pennsylvania and Ohio were neck and neck for a while. Ohio has gone way off the deep end, where today the former Speaker of the House, Larry Householder, he was sentenced to the maximum 20 years in prison for his orchestration of the $60 million bribery scheme that everybody in Ohio is paying for. If you live in Ohio, your electric rates shot up 30% because of this guy who lined his pockets and of course, you know, some others. You know, they're good at spreading it around. Now, here's the weird thing. This is the thing that gets me, and this is the thing that infuriates me. These criminals do this stuff. Okay, he's going to spend a little bit of time in jail. But the people who were behind it, they're still making money off of it. The rate increase sticks. The fruits of the crime stick. That's my problem in all of this stuff. How come we don't go back and undo the damage that the householders of the world have done, that the Trumps of the world have done. This is why elections matter. This is why voting matters. I want to hear your thoughts. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. If something I said got under your skin, got under your nerves, made you mad, made you angry, I want to hear it.